This is Spectrum West, the arts, music, and culture of Western Wisconsin. Hi, everybody. I'm Al Ross. Nice to have you along for this week's ride. It's amazing how often we schedule guests only to find that what we know is only the tip of a big iceberg. A good example is Tony Holt. I contacted John Potter at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson because I thought talking a bit about private voice lessons offered with Mr. Holt might be interesting. Little did I know that Tony Holt's history and pedigree are much more profound than I could ever imagine. I think you'll find his story fun and fascinating. We'll also take a look at the 13th, the Past Here event, happening right now near downtown Chippewa Falls, an historic encampment of fur traders, lumberjacks, and Native American reenactors. Jim Oliver's here. He'll take us to Winona, Minnesota, where you'll find the Great River Shakespeare Festival. Jim and his guest will preview all four performances this season. And Jim will spell out what's on other stages in various Western Wisconsin locations as well. By the way, we aren't going to impede the flow of our show with pledge segments, even though we're in the middle of the WPR Spring Pledge Drive. I guess today's the last day. We would, of course, very much appreciate whatever volume of support you can provide anytime to help keep our engines running. And I'll remind you that support can be tendered by phone at 888-202-2552 or go to WPR.org. And thank you for that. And here's where we initiate this May edition of Spectrum West. A good example of the application of the axiom, better late than never, is two retired educators. Retired does not mean sedentary in these cases. Both Blue Goals, Will Denson, formerly a mentor of theater, and Anders Schaefer, who sculpted young artists, their names together on the cover of a book. The words are Denson's and the illustrations are Schaefer's. The Dancing Bear. Something into which life and society can turn us if we're not aware of that risk. I have to say that this is the first time that I can remember being in a studio with two professors emeriti. I'm nervous being in such such company. If you're a working professor, you're a professor. Retired, you're emeritus. What would a person who is destined to become a professor be? And I came up with professor.
I guess.
Or confessor.
So now this book, Will, is labeled as a brief thought-provoking poem. Thought to myself, what thoughts was he hoping to provoke? And then I thought I should ask him if he likes it when you have to reveal what the book is all about in an interview, or would you rather have people figure it all out for themselves?
Well, on the one hand, I think it's better to know in advance, because I've talked to friends of mine who were at first under the opinion that it's a children's book, and it's a little too dark for a children's book. So I don't mind that. In any case, it's not a secret. It's about what it's about. Yeah. And we all become dancing bears.
What if someone, you're at a function and someone comes up to you and says they got something completely different out of it? The dancing bear is a metaphor for persistence in the face of ridicule or something stronger rather than surrender, which is kind of what a dancing bear is about. How would you feel about that? Would you rejoice and say, hey, I love the interpretation?
It certainly wouldn't bother me. Once you've written something and you're done with it, it sort of doesn't belong to you anymore.
Right.
Then it belongs to whoever reads it, and whatever they get out of it, they get out of it.
Well, most authors I've talked to do relish the concept of someone coming up and giving them a fresh interpretation of what they wrote.
If nothing else, it means they read it.
Exactly. Well, since many of us, Will, are dancing bears, are or become dancing bears, do you think it's easier or more difficult today to shed stereotypes and societal expectations than it may have been when we were all growing up?
I can only speak for myself, but I think it's a lot harder today to be an individual. I just think there are so many forces and so many things coming at you that you have to conform to that it's pretty hard not to be a dancing bear. And I thought it was hard enough when I was young, but I think it's much harder. I don't know how Anders feels about it.
Well, let's find out how Anders feels about it.
I think that you probably can escape some things, but there are a lot of pressures that turn us into cookie-cutter examples of people. And I sense that there's a bit of a problem, mass thinking. thinking the same way about things.
For one thing, it's a lot easier for us to know what other people are thinking today.
Mm. Yeah.
They don't hide what they're thinking, and they can hide behind anonymity.
Talking points or bumper stickers.
Yeah.
So, Will, you carried this poem with you for over 30 years. Why now? Why does this poem see the light of day now?
I was walking down the hallway in the upstairs of our house, and I was thinking about what can I do this winter to keep me busy, and it just came to me. I can't explain it. I just remembered it. It was totally forgotten, and then I thought of it. And
where was it physically? Was it on a legal pad? Was it typed in a...
It was on a sheet of paper typed out. It stuck in a file someplace. It took me about half an hour to find it. It was well put away.
The fact that the poem is 30 years old was the basis for my question about the difference between then and now. Your perspective then was as a younger man, and they say as we get older, sometimes we get more cynical, and maybe some of us get softer. Your feeling about the reasons for writing a poem like this have not changed.
If anything, they've strengthened, okay. I think. I don't have touch with students anymore, but when I watch them, it seems like the way they dress and their expressions and them always being buried in their cell phones or whatever, it seems to me there's a lot more conformity going on.
That's Will Denson. He is Professor Emeritus, Professor of Theater at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. Anders Schaefer is in the studio with us as well. He's a Professor Emeritus in the Art Department at UW-Eau Claire. They have collaborated, finally, on The Dancing Bear, a wonderful book and a wonderful poem. Anders, you're a prolific and polished painter and artist. You published your own young people's book. When did that come out?
2001, called The Fantastic Journey of Peter Bruegel.
Yeah.
And it survived. The World Trade Center actually physically fell on the book when it was laid out on tables.
Really?
And the editor had to walk 83 blocks to get home. But she came back in 2 days and called me and said, Peter Bruegel lives.
Oh, wow.
So it went through kind of a dramatic start there.
Hmm. Still available.
And the idea was that when I was a kid, nobody knew anything about Peter Bruegel, the great painter. I wanted to make a book for kids. Mm-hmm. About Bruegel, and I think it was more for 9 to 12-year-old, mm-hmm. older kids, and I found out a lot about Bruegel. I actually took the trip that I described in Europe, which was a lot of fun.
Is it tougher illustrating someone else's words, or is it easier?
In this case, it was a pure pleasure, because Will stage directed me. He's a brilliant stage director, and little suggestions he would make. I had dinner with one of his former students the other night, and she said Will would come up to him and just make a few short suggestions, and it would change the whole mm-hmm. way the performance and the understanding of the performance would come across to the audience. Just by changing a figure from one side of the page to the other changed everything. The biggest thing that I had trouble with was getting the bear right. My bears looked too much like Dumbo the elephant or some kind of, you know, friendly, goofy thing at first. And obviously I wasn't getting the realistic seriousness of what Will was trying to get across. And he gently directed me into making mm-hmm. the bear more realistic. And I actually remember seeing a dancing bear when I was a very small child. Ringling Brothers Circus, I think, in Chicago in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. I was able to pull that one up.
And I think the dancing bears that I've seen over the years were even more visually belittled in the fact that they would wear a little tutu and they'd have a little hat. And, oh, he does have a hat. So is this a male bear or a female bear?
Oh, I think it's a guy.
It's a guy.
I agree. Yeah. He's one of us.
Ah. So usually when a painter decides to paint something that he wants people to remember, he's looking at a scene and he paints it. With this, you have to look at words. And yes. Paint them. How tough is that?
Oh, actually, I was a writer at one point, to be a writer. And
once a writer, always a writer. Well, don't say at one point.
Okay, thank you. I'll hold on to that.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, I love words, and I like the way words and pictures fit together. That's something that's fascinated me over the years. There's a rhythm to it. You know, sometimes you just leave out some words and just have a picture, or sometimes the words and the picture work together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's almost like composing music. And working with his beautiful poem, it just kind of inspired me to build a rhythm in the visual rhythm that worked with the rhythm of the poem.
Well, boom, you said, I got to do this poem. I got to do something with it. I'm going to make a book out of it. Did the boom also include Anders immediately? Did you think of him? And just because he's here, you don't have to. It's, you know, if you were thinking of somebody.
I'd seen Anders work a lot, and he tends to work in narrative, I think. And so eventually that came to me, and I've always respected his work. Although Anders and I taught in the same building for probably 30 years, we didn't know each other well. I mean, we knew each other, and I worked with his wife, but I'd never worked with Anders.
From the time you had this epiphany to publishing, how long of a period are we talking?
I thought about doing it in August of last year.
Oh, okay.
And we got it done in April, I think it was. So it's what, 8 or 9 months.
And your span of artistic work took how long, Anders?
Probably about 2.5 months. I go into my studio in Banbury Place every day. But the actual working time, I would say, would be 2.5 months.
Mm-hmm. Do you save everything you do? For instance, a first rendition of The Bear.
Yeah, illustrator, it's jargon, it's storyboards. I did the whole thing out, showed it to Will, and he made suggestions for changes. And then I did the more finished work later, and I changed that as I went along, too.
You got any current shows? You got projects you want to tell us about?
Yeah, I'm always working on something. I have shows in galleries and potential for some shows in museums coming up. I'm working on those, but I wouldn't say specifically at this point, but I go in there and work every day.
Will, what's on your plate?
I'm trying to finish a children's play, my version of the Cinderella story. It's called Cinderella Nothing, and it's kind of a hip version of what happens. Cinderella's half-sister says, you're a nothing, your father was a nothing, and you'll always be a nothing. So she becomes Cinderella Nothing. It's not your bright kid's play that you generally see. It's the way my mind works.
No kidding. Can't wait for that. So now when people collaborate and they find that they work well together, they say maybe inwardly, and you haven't said it outwardly yet, we should do this again. Have you talked about that over coffee or beer or whatever you talk over?
That's interesting. I have definitely thought about it. We haven't even whispered about it.
We better try that beer thing.
Yeah.
Will Denson, Anders Schaefer. It's called The Dancing Bear. It's a lovely book. Where can we get it?
It's on sale right now at Tangled Up in Hue in Volume 1. This summer I'm going to have a booth at the farmer's market, and it'll be for sale there.
Oh, cool.
And Anders will probably be there to help me autograph it if anybody wants to stop in the summer and buy it directly from us.
Well, I have a copy, and I'm going to ask you to autograph mine. We'll get to that in a minute. Thank you guys for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
The Dancing Bear, more imaginative output from a western Wisconsin region chock full of people very good at what they do. Thankfully for us, unable to keep from doing it, even in retirement. Shakespeare, lumberjacks, and a singing teacher with an amazing history all down the road here on Spectrum West. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the National Eagle Center, hosting their annual Fishing for Eagles program Wednesdays and Thursdays this summer, where kids can learn the joy of fishing on the Mississippi River. NationalEagleCenter.org/events is the website. Support also comes from Luther College, where nearly 1,000 students, both music and non-music majors, participate in 6 choirs, 3 orchestras, and 2 jazz bands. More information at luther.edu. And support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony. Baritone soloist Kenneth Pereira joins the symphony for its Alpine Spring Concert. That's 7:30 Saturday in UW-Eau Claire's Gantner Concert Hall. The website is cvsymphony.org. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you along this week. Little Bobby Sanabria in the background. Visitor to the Eau Claire Jazz Fest a few years ago. Well, the theater scene in western Wisconsin is broad, deep, and active, including works of the best-known bard of them all. Here's Jim Oliver with this week's Oliver Chronicle.
The Great River Shakespeare Festival will return for its 13th season, June 22nd, and continue through July the 23rd on the campus of Winona State University. Joining us by telephone to talk about the festival is Emily Kurash, the festival's director of marketing.
Yes, I always enjoy connecting with you in the springtime each year. It's one of those moments that reminds me that the season really is coming on fast.
Well, let's get started with what's in this season.
We have, again, just some fantastic plays happening this summer, and we're really excited about some of the additional events that happen as part of our season as well. Our first show is As You Like It, one of Shakespeare's famous comedies. It's a fun comic romp. It has to do with mistaken identity and people in disguise and a whole bunch of rich people running in the woods and what befalls them there. We have one of our company rock stars, Tara Flanagan, playing Rosalind. When you are a female Shakespeare actor, that's one of those roles that you just can't wait to sink your teeth into, and I can't wait to see what she does with that. Also, our season will bring Julius Caesar, which I don't think we could have picked a better year to be doing Julius Caesar, considering we're in an election season that certainly seems to be providing us with ample opportunities to talk about people and governmental roles and politicians. Julius Caesar gives us a great platform to start conversations. I think everybody's probably quite familiar with how that play ends. I don't think there's any surprise that that's the tragedy of the season. Our third show this year is actually a bluegrass musical, and that's not something we do very often. But Theorama is a musical by some of the gentlemen from the bluegrass group, the Red Clay Ramblers, which are a pretty famous bluegrass group. And this musical tells the story of John Banvard. And John Banvard was an artist in the late 1800s in America. This was when the panorama painting craze was at its height, and he found a way to paint on canvas and roll those paintings on rollers and make it look like you were moving down the Mississippi. He partnered up with P.T. Barnum and traveled his moving panorama, his georama, all over the country, and that was a lot of people's first experience of what the Mississippi River was like. He was able to travel this to Europe and painted a lot more and is one of those most famous, important people in American history that you've never heard of. It is a lovely show. The music is just fantastic. Jack Herrick, who is one of the composers of the show, actually is our music director for this summer. It's the second ever production to be performed. We workshopped it at Great River Shakespeare Festival back in 2012. So people who've been around the festival for a little bit might be familiar with this show, but it debuted in St. Louis this February, so we're the first main stage production of Georama ever, which is pretty exciting. The final show in our season is actually our intern and apprentice production, which takes place in the Black Box Theater and is put on by the younger artists in the company. So college and grad school age students working in various shops, the scene shop, costume shop, stage management, as well as our apprentice acting company. And that show is Coriolanus. Also, it takes place in Rome and around some kind of wartime sort of political issues. But it's one of those lesser-known shows that does not happen very often, and we're really excited to be able to incorporate all of the plays in the canon into what we're doing at Great River Shakespeare Festival.
She is Emily Kurash, Director of Marketing for the Great River Shakespeare Festival in Winona. The festival opens on June the 22nd. You mentioned that there is one show that is not a Shakespearean production. How do you go about deciding which one of those shows should be included in the Shakespeare Festival?
You know, it's becoming more and more common. I would say you'd be very hard-pressed to find any Shakespeare company in the United States that doesn't do other playwright's work. A couple years ago, we did Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which complemented Hamlet beautifully. It highlighted those two small characters in Hamlet. Last year, we did The Glass Menagerie, an American master's fantastic work, Tennessee Williams. And Diorama, although it's relatively new, it tackles the importance of words and how words and the way you use words can change the world. And that's really the center of it for us. We're a text-based company, so it's all about the words for us. We really dig into those scripts, and we make sure that the actors know exactly what they're saying so that the audience can know what they're saying. We've heard so many people's stories of, oh, you know, my freshman English teacher made us read Romeo and Juliet, and it was the worst experience of my life. And our goal is to get people past that, to find the stories in these great plays that have stuck around for over 400 years. This year's the 400th anniversary of the death of William Shakespeare, so it's pretty clear that he's got some lasting abilities. And for us, it's all about choosing what plays tell important stories and use important words.
Mm-hmm. Well, now there are all kinds of other activities you have going on there before the season begins, and then, of course, during the season, the day of production.
Every single day of the week except Monday. So there's performances Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sometimes twice a day. Free concerts on the green every single Friday and Saturday night from 5 to 7. So on the green at Winona State University, we've got a fantastic regional lineup this summer. You can check that out on our website at grsf.org. We've got Saturday mornings, our front porch series, and that features different speakers that really highlight topics that come up in the plays and really tie into what the overall feeling of our season is about. We also have education events for all ages. We have our third annual Will Run this summer. The Will Run is slightly longer than a 5K. It's a 28 furlong. And as far as we know, it's the only 28 furlong run around. And it's a great chance to get out, enjoy scenic Winona, and meet some of the company, too. We've got a lot of runners in our company that really enjoy that event.
Now, you said something to me earlier about a group called Friends of Will.
Yes. So the Friends of Will started in Winona many years ago when the festival first started, and this is our 13th season. And we've been able to find really wonderful opportunities to grow that group. It started out as people who could house actors temporarily or provide food. Our ushers are part of the Friends of Will. And this year, we're so excited that the Friends of Will is expanding into Eau Claire. There's fantastic people at kind of the forefront leading this charge to expand what's happening in Eau Claire, which is apparently a huge fan of Shakespeare as a whole in the city. And finding ways to get folks in Eau Claire connected to what's happening down at Great River Shakespeare Festival. One opportunity to do that is a bus trip that's happening on Friday, July 22nd, a Friday afternoon, to come down to Winona, see a performance, enjoy one of the concerts on the green, connect with some of the acting company, and then head back up to Eau Claire. Soak up the scenery, enjoy the ride. I think there's going to be a short additional presentation about the play, about Shakespeare, that's going to be a part of that. Really kind of be the jumping point for finding more collaborations between Great River Shakespeare Festival and Eau Claire.
Is there any place around here where we could make contact with somebody now, or is that going
to
be?
Yeah, you can. So I think the best way to do that is to get in contact with Rosie Bijan, and I have a feeling that she's a well-known person in Eau Claire.
Okay.
The best way that I have to get a hold of her right now is over the phone. There's no online registration for this group yet, but it is 715-835-0697.
Okay. Where do the actors, directors, and tech people come from, and where do you recruit them?
They're from everywhere. So we're a professional equity theater, which means that we are pulling in the best of the best from all over the country. We have actors from New York, from Chicago. We're really excited to get a few more folks down from Minneapolis, from LA, from numerous college programs around the country, we're lucky that we're able to use some of the incredibly talented teaching faculty at some of our top theater schools in the U.S. who aren't teaching in the summer, and they come and work at the Shakespeare Festival. Our interns and apprentices come from programs all over the country, and it started out people who knew people who were coming to work, but we've grown so big that we just get people wanting to work with us now.
That's a nice situation to be in.
It really is.
Well, we've been visiting with Emily Karash, Director of Marketing for the Great River Shakespeare Festival in Winona. The productions will be staged in the Performing Arts Center on the campus of Winona State University. The productions include Julius Caesar, As You Like It, and the apprentice intern production of Coriolanus and Georama, a play by Wes Heiler and Matt Schatz. For more information, you can go to www.grsf.org. Emily, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much. It's always good to be on.
And it's always good to have Jim Oliver on Spectrum West each week. Back in Chippewa Falls history, and he teaches folks to sing comfortably and has experience that's something to behold, all coming up on Spectrum West. Spectrum Memoranda, the Red Horse Gallery in Fountain City, Wisconsin, features a May exhibit of new works from Jamie Schell. The website is red-horse-gallery.com. It's 30 years of culture under canvas. Saturday, June 11th, Blue Canvas Orchestrated, featuring the Duluth Superior Symphony Orchestra with the Blue Canvas Orchestra, 7:30 p.m. at Big Top Chautauqua. Details online at bigtop.org/30th. Well, sculptures are in place for the 6th Sculpture Tour Eau Claire. 34 sculptures featuring 32 artists from Canada and 17 United States. They're for us and for sale. They're on South and North Barstow Streets, Water Street, and the Mayo Campus, so you can check that out. Go Paint, the 4th Annual Plein Air Painting Competition, invites artists of all skill levels to register for the May 15th through 20th event in and around Durand, Wisconsin. Details online at gopaint.org. It's kind of 11th hour there. Not sure how they're operating that, but you can try. Maybe get in. That'd be great. Well, it's a combination outdoor camping adventure. Let me show you how it's done. Dress up, make believe, party in the park. Let's have a whole bunch of friends over. And history lesson, all rolled into one four-day celebration going on now. The past here is back in Chippewa Falls. And Jim Shue from the Historical Society of Chippewa County provides the details.
It's a rendezvous-type event. It features the French fur trade era of about 200 years ago up until about 100 years ago. A couple dozen camps set up, each one different, of course, mostly people in tents, a couple teepees. We'll have a wigwam this year. The majority of the event focuses on the French fur trade. We also have a section that deals with lumbering.
Reenactment is another way of saying it. People are literally there dressed in buckskin and...
Exactly. This is living history. And yeah. I guess the one thing that makes it different from the typical rendezvous, usually a rendezvous is y'all come on down, set up whatever kind of tent you've got and party with us. And this is really a little more refined. It's kind of like a juried art fair. We allow new people to come in, but we want everything to be as authentic as possible. The reenactors send us information about what they do and a picture. And so we can tell that they are really authentic.
They literally live there for 4 days?
A lot of people do, not everyone. Okay. I don't sleep there on the ground for 4 days, but a lot of people do.
So now we have new and continuing attractions and educational activities. Tell me, what do you have planned that's fresh this year?
Okay, one of the new things is a man named Jackson Buxton, and he is actually an Ojibwa descent, and he will be talking about hunting and gathering lifestyle of the Ojibwa that lived here in Wisconsin. We've got a weaver that's not been there before demonstrating the weaving. We've got a Native American beadwork person who's new with us this year. We've got a woman who's going to be demonstrating cast iron cooking over the fire. Mm-hmm. We actually will have two cooks. We have a camp cook there who cooks for all of the reenactors who are busy during the school days, and they only have a half-hour break for lunch, and so they need someone else to cook for them those 3 days when it's school days. And we've got archery this year. We've not had archery in the past, yeah. And so that's another good event. Then a lot of continuing hands-on events. We've got tomahawk throwing. We've got the canoe paddle race. We've got a sawing competition, the cat and mouse balance game. So lots of hands-on activities for the kids and adults. We've got live music, as usual. We've got people strolling around the grounds. Judy Brist playing bagpipes. Peter Lee playing banjo and guitar, Bruce Sorensen on fiddle, and Jerry Way, of course, is going to be there singing his original songs about the history of Chippewa Falls and playing guitar, and I'll be accompanying him on percussion.
Okay. Jim Shue in the studio with us. The past here, Thursday through Sunday, May 12th through the 15th, happening right now in Allen Park. That's where, by Bridge and Spring Streets.
Yes, the confluence of the Duncan Creek and the Chippewa River. It's okay. The corner of River and Bridge Street. I guess the reason we call this event the past here is because the site itself is quite significant. It is the location where the early explorers would have come up the Chippewa River and pulled into Duncan Creek because they couldn't have gone up the big falls, which now are invisible, of course,
oh, sure,
with the dam there. But this is the place that happened. It's the place where the Ojibwa Indians would have camped prior to the Europeans coming here. They fished below the falls and they hunted. There were a lot of buffalo in the Chippewa Falls area. I guess later on, of course, the site was the location of the Chippewa Lumber and Boom Company, which was the largest sawmill in the world under one roof. And so this year, we're unveiling a brand new mobile lumberjack museum. It'll be in the park, and basically it's designed again for fourth graders, but everybody will, I think, enjoy it and learn from it. On the exterior of the trailer are 12 different parts of the exhibit which deal with lumberjack jobs, and we ask the fourth graders, once you learn about these lumberjack jobs, decide which job you would have liked to have done had you lived 150 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then on the inside of the trailer, we're featuring more interior type things, a blacksmith shop, a rendition of a saw sharpening, the filer in camp, a mess hall, and an actual scale model of the Chippewa Lumber and Boom Company sawmill. That will be on display as well. We've got a 4.5-foot round saw blade, a band saw blade, which is about a foot wide and used to be 150 feet long. So we've got a lot of artifacts and photos of people using these tools and artifacts, more than 24 little exhibits in this trailer. I think it's going to be a very popular thing. We are also borrowing from the Forest History Association of Wisconsin 9 large colorful banners, which basically go through history of lumbering in Wisconsin.
When someone is involved, and you have been involved for so many years with a society like the Chippewa County Historical Society, they have a lot of people to thank along the way.
Exactly. We have a fairly new volunteer who's been involved for about the last 5 years, Jake Jacobson, who had the vision of transforming this trailer, which used to be kind of a hodgepodge of pioneer artifacts in the past, into this really kind of state-of-the-art new exhibit. This is nice timing with our plans to build a new museum and our fundraising efforts. It gives people who've not been to our museum an idea of what we're doing there, and they can see us out and about rather than at our location, although everyone's welcome.
Let's talk about that new museum. What can you reveal?
The site became available about 1.5 years ago, and we were successful at purchasing it at the end of the year, and it's the former Dairy Queen, or most recently Piff's Pizza, location across from the municipal swimming pool in Chippewa Falls. It's on Bridgewater Avenue, about a block from Lina Kugel's Lodge and right next door to the southern entrance of Irvin Park.
And the Northern Wisconsin State Fairgrounds is
just up the hill, yes.
What's the timetable for that?
Well, we had the existing building leveled, raised last week, and we are just starting our capital campaign. We've got several knowledgeable people who are coming on board to help us coordinate the fundraising.
Tell us specifics about the past here as far as times go. It's on now. It begins this afternoon at 3 o'clock if you're listening on Thursday and continues Friday, Saturday, Sunday. What are the times on each day?
3 to 6 on Thursday and Friday. Saturday, we're there all day from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., a little longer than in the past.
In Allen Park, speaking of the word park, how about parking?
This is located right near the new roundabout entering downtown. There are several parking lots within a block of our entrance to the event. That's probably the most convenient would be to park at the visitor center, the new visitor center, or across the street from there, or up by the Rainbow Bridge. You can walk the bike trail down about a block, less than a block. So there's quite a bit of parking. And I should probably mention that we've got a variety of authentic, older-fashioned food, fry bread. We've got an old-fashioned candy store, Voyager Stew, Buffalo Burgers. New this year will be Soakup's Brats. They probably had sausages back then, but they probably maybe weren't called bratwurst. This time of year, a brat off the grill really tastes great.
Oh, boy. I can't go to an outdoor function and not smell brats being cooked.
Exactly.
The past here through Sunday. Allen Park, Chippewa Falls, Jim Hsu. Thanks.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Show the kids what roughing it really means. The website is the past, P-A-S-T, past, P-A-S-S-E-D, here, thepastpasthere.org. Fun stuff. What do you say we check on what's on stage in Western Wisconsin? Here again is Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. The Northern Star Theater of Rice Lake will stage Midlife the Crisis musical through Sunday. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will stage Evil Dead the musical through Saturday at the Oxford Theater. An original adaptation of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs will be staged Friday through Sunday and the following Friday through Sunday at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. The play will be available for school groups through June 4th. Unnecessary Farce will be staged Fridays and Saturdays through May 21st at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. Auditions for the farce A Little Murder Never Hurt Anybody will be held by the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson Monday and Tuesday, May 23rd and 24th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. in the Black Box Theater of the Phipps. Auditions for Cumberland ETC's production of Death by Design will be held at the ETC Theater on Wednesday, May 18th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. and on Saturday, May 21st from 9 a.m. to noon. The Eau Claire Children's Theater is holding auditions for a game show at 5:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday at the Oxford Theater. I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. Support for WPR comes from Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, presenting the work of regional artists Moira Bateman and Leo Smith on display through August 21st. Visit information at mmam.org. Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, offering resources dedicated to helping families get healthy and stay healthy. Local wellness opportunities are on the classes and events page at mayoclinichealthsystem.org. Well, now it's time to take a look at the whole iceberg to which I alluded as we opened the program. When I scheduled a conversation with Tony Holt, I thought I was simply going to find out more about the singing instruction he offers through the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Turns out, in preparation for our chat, I discovered a life very well lived and a scrapbook full of wonderful memories, beginning in London, eventually adding pages in America's Midwest. Let's get to know Tony Holt, shall we? Are you a singing teacher or are you a voice coach? Because I've always wondered, can one be taught to sing? Can one be taught to carry a tune? Or is it either there or not there?
Well, you know, I don't, you know, distinguish between the two. I think a singing teacher is a voice coach, and the other way around. Mm-hmm. I think you have to, you know, explore elements of both sides when you're teaching someone to sing. Very often, you know, students come to me knowing how to sing to a certain extent, but maybe, you know, doing it in the way that's not best for them. And I think there's always room for exploration and ideas which will help them to enjoy their singing more. So I think voice coaching and teaching singing are much one and the same thing.
So as you're watching someone sing, can you tell by their tone or can you tell by just looking at them that they're straining or they're doing something that they may not have to do and you can make suggestions that way?
Yeah. I think both, looking at them and hearing. I can hear immediately when the tone is tight, you know, and they're grabbing and they're tightening muscles in their throat and everywhere because one muscle very often leads to another tightening muscle. And by looking at them, you can tell very often whether they're trying to strain to get the notes out. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, going into the wrong kind of voice. You know, one of the things that challenges me these days is the amount of singing that there is on places like YouTube. And, you know, they watch things and they watch them singing, you know, particularly the younger ones, and they try and copy exactly what they're looking at and what they're hearing.
Ah.
And it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah, sure.
You've got to go through some pretty careful stages to start off with. That can be boring if you start talking too much about that to a young singer. They think, this isn't much fun.
Uh-huh.
So you have to be careful.
Well, it's ironic that you brought up YouTube because in my search for information about Tony Holt's past, I found a plethora of things on YouTube of you singing, especially
right.
with the King Singers. You're all over YouTube. So if people want to find out more about Tony Holt, all you got to do is put Tony Holt in YouTube and you're going to find a ton of stuff. So let's go back. The thing that validated you, I think, was when you were asked to be in a chorus or a choir at the coronation of Queen Elizabeth on June 2nd of 1953.
Yeah.
Now, when I searched for that online, I found a certain choir. There was a BBC documentary done about 32 young lads on a show called Real Lives Reunited. I don't think that was your group. From what I read, you were in a group of like 20 or something. But that's not surprising because I read that there were over 500 people singing at that coronation.
Exactly, yes, there were a lot. I was 12 years old at the time, and I was very lucky. I was with a group that had drawn the 20 or so, I can't remember exactly how many there were, but they drew 20 or so choristers from various different churches around the United Kingdom.
Well, that might have been you then.
I was one of those selected.
This group might have been you. Did you go away for 4 weeks at Addington Palace?
Yes, I did. Yes.
And that's the group.
I've never found that.
Guys like David Reeve and Eddie Officer and Sam Greenaway and Dennis Whitehead and Nicholas.
Yes, that's the group.
Nicholas Swain and Roger Dormer and Graham Neal. Those were the guys that were all interviewed.
Yeah, and they came from various different places in the UK. I really couldn't get back for that. I think they did have a reunion, and they asked me to be there. I remember now, but I've never found that.
It's like a 30-minute piece.
Well, that's interesting.
They're all contemporaries of yours. They're all interviewed individually, and then they all come individually into this room, and they look at each other. And then what happens is they sing, these older guys all sing with a group of kids in front of an audience, and it brings tears to their eyes.
Interesting. Gosh.
Yeah.
I wish I'd been there.
No kidding. So great. I'm glad I found that. It may lead you to something that'll be almost like a video scrapbook for you.
Well, indeed, yeah.
Maybe you can look some of these guys up.
Yeah, the most exciting thing to me at that stage was getting out of school for about 4 weeks.
That's exactly what one of the guys said in the interview. And that chorus was made up of boys between 11 and 15, it said.
That's right. Thank you for that.
You bet. You were in another very prestigious group, which, by the way, celebrated a 90th birthday a couple of years ago in 2014, the BBC Singers.
Right.
That impressed me. I thought to myself, you know, we have to have some WPR singers.
Right.
Now that the BBC has done that. Yeah,
I think NPR tried one. I don't know where it went. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, I think so. It was impressive that I read that the BBC had six different performing groups. Or maybe still does.
Well, it may do. I really don't know. These things all happened at the same time because I was what they call a freelance singer living in London, so waiting on the end of the phone for somebody to call up and say, can you do, you know, this tomorrow? And I was trying to juggle my dates around. I was in a cathedral choir and I was in the BBC Singers. Sometimes these times clashed, you know, and one had to be not entirely truthful about where you were and what you were doing. It was a bit of a juggling act.
Yeah, I read that the King Singers first began in 1968. We're on the phone with Tony Holt. At least at this stage of his life, he is a voice teacher, a voice coach, teaching private lessons at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. He lives in Scandia, Minnesota, but started out in London. Now that the King Singers have been brought up, let's talk about them, because that's, I think, the group in which you had the most continuity. It consisted of six singers in total. It was an a cappella group and very, very popular. Late 1969 until 1978, they had the most consistent group of guys, Nigel Perrin, Alastair Hume, Alastair Thompson, Anthony Holt, that would be you, although we all know you as Tony now, Simon Carrington and Brian Kay. So tell us about the King Singers.
Well, yes, it came out of King's College, Cambridge. Except me, choral scholars at King's College, they found that just singing sacred music in the choir was not enough for them. So they got together and they started doing other things, enjoying themselves at dinner parties and that sort of thing. Uh-huh. And that's really where it all came from. After their 3 years at college, they didn't really want to let that go. So they started this group, which was called something completely different in Latin. They wanted to be really clever about it. and it finally came down to the King's Singers, and that's where it all got going. But it started in a very gentle way, and we certainly weren't touring anything then, but we were going round the country and singing at schools and music clubs and that sort of thing, and trying to get the name known. I remember on one occasion we went to a school that was supposed to be expecting us, and the teacher who introduced us said, "Now we have the Warwick Boy Singers." No, and she got the name wrong twice before somebody from the group piped up and said, "We're actually the King Singers." So it was touch and go at that point whether the group would ever take off, but it was quite a funny occasion. Our first big break was a tour that was arranged by a friend of a friend of a friend to go to Australia and New Zealand, 3 months away from any other jobs that we were doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a big turning point, because we all committed to it, and that's really where it got going. Yeah.
You were pretty popular in the late 70s. A lot of the YouTube videos that I saw were television appearances that you made. If people want to see Tony Holt having a lot of fun, go to YouTube and search for King Singers, and you'll come up with them singing a very neat version of Short People in Boston, a very unique song called I'm a Train. You guys had pretty fast mouths in that song. You did the solo, Tony, on Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head.
Yeah.
And the Creole Love Call, you were mimicking instruments.
Yes, indeed.
I can see why you stuck with that group as long as you did. It looks like a real enjoyable task.
It was. Well, you know, one thing about touring with a group is that you've got to be really good friends. And we were. In 2018, we're going to celebrate our 50th anniversary, and so I'm going to get back to the UK for that. It's an interesting dynamic.
It must be so nice to have those wonderful aspects of your career documented on film. I feel like I know you. We're old, like we're old buddies.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. I didn't realize so much was on YouTube until quite recently. You know, that's due mainly to people asking for them. People who have seen one group or another on tour, and they look it up and they say, you know, have you got this? Can you find this or that or the other? And so we have a big following, probably not the sort of following really popular singer like Adele or something like that. You know?
Sure.
I might have, but there are, you know, smatterings of people who remember our performances right through the history of the group. It's very interesting.
This really is a delightful opportunity for me to chat with you, and I hope that vocalists now know how incredibly fortunate we are to have you in our midst and how much sense it would make, aspiring singer to someone who wants a renaissance of their singing, an older individual who says, you know, I have time now. I'm going to go see Tony, and I'm going to get this voice back in shape. It's wonderful that you're with us here in Western Wisconsin every once in a while, and I appreciate you being with us here on Spectrum West. I very much hope that you'll keep in touch with us.
Well, thank you very much for this. Kind words. I will add that, you know, even older singers come to me and say, look, I really enjoyed singing when I was younger, but, you know, I've got this problem and I'd like to continue. And so, you know, that's the other end of the deal, that I try and, you know, give them something to hang on to there. And that's very rewarding as well. But thank you. Thank you. I'd be delighted to keep in touch. It'd be great.
Well, there you go. That's the iceberg that I was talking about, the tip of which is all I could see the other day. Tony Holt, a guy who melts your heart with charm and an ability to impart not only great singing lessons and advice, but wisdom accrued through experience as well. Congratulations to the Phipps Center in Hudson for enrolling an accomplished faculty. The website is thephipps, that's PHIPPS.org. Well, coming up next week here on Spectrum West, a pianist with a future and his mentor, art meets activism and more. Right now, thanks and bon voyage to Jessica, an intern soon to be a superstar, Dean, who launches many of these careers with solid advice, and Mrs. Brown, who still deserves a name with a more expressive color. And by the way, thanks for your support during this, the last day of the pledge drive. You can go to WPR.org and make a donation, or 888-202-2552. That would be kind of nice of you to do. I'm Al Ross. This is Spectrum West. Thanks again. See you next week.